The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But now, Ukraine has reportedly launched UK-supplied Storm Shadow missiles into Russia's Kursk region. This is after they had launched the American-made ATAC-Ms. Meanwhile, Russia is claiming that it has launched an ICBM, an intercontinental ballistic missile, at an area of Ukraine. As the war passes its 1,000-day milestone, to provide expert analysis, we're joined by Patrick Bury, Senior Associate Professor in Warfare and Counterterrorism at the University of Bath, former NATO analyst. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, the impact of this escalation in trading missiles. First of all, the impact of the ATAC-Ms and then the use of Storm missiles. What good will they do Ukraine?
Well, essentially, it's about the battlefield position, Pat, where the Ukrainians are now under increasing pressure and having to cede ground in parts of the Donbass at the fastest rate it has since the war started. Essentially, it's a manpower problem. The Ukrainians mobilized, but probably not enough and quick enough. And they're starting to, those supplies of manpower are starting to dwindle. And the Russians, of course, have an advantage in manpower anyway. They are taking heavy casualties, about 1,500 a month killed and wounded, but they're able to replace most of those. And so it's coming down to a numbers game, and Russia are essentially swamping the zone. And so the idea behind the ATAC-Ms, obviously the Biden administration had weighed heavily on this for a long period. The Ukrainians have been asking for them for over a year. But I think the idea is that it can help slow down the Russian offensives, which are expected to come and be renewed in the winter. And the Storm Shadow, similarly, too, could just strike deeper inside Russia.
Yeah, and I'm wondering what the range is of the Storm Shadow missiles and also those of the ATAC-Ms, what difference it makes.
So if the ATAC-Ms is a mobile-launched, shorter-range ballistic missile system, so got a steep trajectory. And its range, depending on the warhead, is 300 kilometers. So that's seen as the maximum one. The Storm Shadow, different system altogether, launched from, in the Ukrainian case, the Su-24 fighter bomber. And it has a range in the export version of 250 kilometers, or about 155 miles. The Storm Shadow and the French Scalp are very similar. They're kind of special bunker buster bombs. They fly at a low, or cruise missile fire at a very low trajectory, pop up, get GPS, and then hit their target. The ATAC-Ms, obviously, as I mentioned, ballistic faster, yeah. Higher. Yeah, exactly.
Now, the significance of the Russians launching an ICBM from Astrakhan, are they saying, listen, we have bases far beyond the reach of whatever weaponry you have at the moment, Ukraine, and that's what we can do. We can launch these ICBMs from well inside Russia and get you.
So the Russians haven't said they've done it yet, but the Ukrainian Air Force said one was fired at Dnipro in the center of Ukraine. To me, yes, it's having a look at the footage. So first of all, firing an ICBM is quite a serious thing. As far as I can think, and off the top of my head, Bern, this is breaking news, but an ICBM hasn't been used in combat before. Yeah, so... But secondly, looking at some of the footage, it looks like essentially an ICBM is like the biggest missile you can have with the longest range. It's those rockets you think of, which often carry nuclear weapons. They don't have to, and in this case, it was clearly either carrying a conventional warhead or none at all. But that rocket goes up like the ballistics, and then it comes down, and it has what's called a multiple independent rocket vehicle. So basically more bomb missiles, which can be GPS guarded onto their targets, come out of it. And you can see from the footage of this attack in Dnipro, numerous rockets coming down in like sort of streaks of hail, as it were, coming down. But very interestingly, looking at it, Pat, it looks like there's no explosion when they land. So that they may be, and I'll have to wait and see what comes out. But to me, anyway, it looks like they're inert. So it's a demonstration.
Exactly
like
you
say, we've got this all the way back in places you can't hit, and look what we can do if we want.
So this can be seen as a direct response to Biden's go-ahead and the go-ahead from Britain and France.
I think so, yeah. I think the message is, one, look what we can do, and two, you don't want to escalate this any further because we might change what the warheads we put in. But bearing in mind, if they have used dummies, then the next step would probably be conventional.
Now, the question of anti-personnel mines, which are being deployed now, or the go-ahead to deploy them, against Russian personnel. Is that going to make much difference? I mean, if the Russians are throwing the North Koreans at the front line, is that, you know, is that going to be the target for these anti-personnel mines?
So anti-personnel mines are a cheap and effective way of denying ground, essentially. And as I mentioned, the Ukrainians are under a lot of pressure manpower-wise. The Russians have adopted their tactics, so they're sending small groups, say like four soldiers forward on a basically like a suicide mission. Every 20 minutes, they try to infiltrate around the Ukrainian positions. It keeps the Ukrainians on their toes, exhausts them, uses up their ammo. And then after they've done that for a consistent period, then they send a bigger attack at them. And it's having an effect. So the Ukrainians, and again, the US reticent to actually deliver these because of the treaties about land mine use, etc. But I think the military necessity has trumped that now by putting these, they're called non-persistent landmines. They're anti-personnel, so they're fairly small. And they'll put them into, a lot of the fighting is actually happening in wood blocks and the fields around it in the Donbass and Kursk and smaller villages. So these areas are already depopulated and those mines will go into try to basically deny avenues of attack for the Russians. And as I mentioned, non-persistent. So in, you know, months or years, they actually deactivate.
Now, yesterday, the United States, I think, gave $275 million in extra military aid to Ukraine. But that is probably going to dry up fairly rapidly once Trump takes office. So what are we going through at the moment as the winter comes in? We saw Russia targeting the power generation resources of Ukraine, trying to freeze them out over the winter. Are we looking at peace talks sometime in the spring?
I think what we're seeing at the moment is everyone trying to get into the strongest position they can ahead of potential peace talks in spring. There's a question mark about whether Putin would actually come to the table if he's going to have this maximum of gold where he just wants to take the whole country. We'll just have to wait to see. There's obviously a question mark about how Trump handles this. But I don't think really he wants to be seen as a complete loser in Ukraine. That's not good for his image. So I think it's more likely to try to get a deal, some sort of deal, or push them towards a deal on the way things are at the moment, rather than just cutting and running from Ukraine altogether.
But don't forget, he did the deal with the Taliban, which resulted in Biden then cutting and running from Afghanistan with disastrous effects for Biden's reputation, even though the seeds had been sown by Trump.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, as someone who fought in Afghanistan myself, that was a disaster. But ultimately, yeah, the deal that Trump cut with the Taliban was a bit up in the, you know, bit wild. But ultimately, the decision to withdraw and in the manner of which it was done was Biden's responsibility. I just echoed his experiences of Vietnam, essentially. I don't think he was able to judge the problem and the consequences as it was in front of him, rather than getting away from his experiences of Vietnam War.
Now, finally, we should talk about the change by Putin of the doctrine of the use of nuclear weapons in Russia. It looked like a response to the decision to deploy the ATACMS by Ukraine, the go-ahead given by the United States. Do you believe that this new doctrine makes any difference?
Well, it made all the headlines yesterday, but in fact, it's actually been on the cards for months. And basically what it's done is lowering the threshold of when Russia may use nuclear weapons, including like if an ally supplies Ukraine with weapons, etc., if it attacks an ally of Moscow, i.e. Belarus. But ultimately, no, I think it's actually more, again, it's playing into that space of trying to deter and use every means possible around the nuclear risk, essentially, to deter any action against Russia. Essentially, what it is Russia has lost a lot of its conventional deterrence because it's been badly mauled in Ukraine. And so it's having to fall back on the nuclear deterrent more. And so by lowering its alleged threshold, it's trying to create more operational space for itself.
And finally, the question of Putin himself. I mean, is he very secure in his position? You know, he's suppressed all criticism and comment, and the press is not a free press anymore. But are there any people within Russia, the body politic or even wider, who might be bent on getting rid of him because he's failed?
I'm not a Kremlinologist, Pat, you know. I'm more on the security side of things. But I think, and, you know, talking to people who know the country intimately, I think the impact of the Prigozhin mutiny and the very, you know, clear signal that was sent, the way he was met his end, is pretty much tied up for the moment. But, you know, you're never 100% sure in Russian politics. Things can change quickly, like we saw the Prigozhin mutiny. But there's no one really should it sort of... shaking the cage in the way the Prigozhin was at all anymore, and it seems to be pretty swept up. And also the fallacy that, you know, the fallacy in the West, that, look, Russia for hundreds and hundreds of years, people need to get their head around this, is a brutalized society, from the Tsars to the communists to the Russian regime as it is. So even if Putin goes, who's going to replace him? That's the thing we need to get our heads around.
Patrick Bury, Senior Associate Professor in Warfare and Counterterrorism at the University of Bath and former NATO analyst, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.